Hello and welcome to the Revenue Rocket Shoot the Moon podcast for this week in May of 2021. I'm Mike Harbath, CEO and founder of Revenue Rocket, the premier M&A and growth strategy advisor for IT services companies worldwide. Today, we have Ryan Barnett and Matt Lockhart with me from our firm. And gentlemen, welcome.
Hi, Mike. Hey, how are you doing?
Hey, we're good. Ryan, I think we heard you in there too. Welcome.
Hey, dude. Yeah, thanks for having us today. And, you know, excited about our topic of what's hot today. And I understand, Mike, that's always you. But today we're going to be talking about some trends and seeing what life is like out there and where some of our clients, partners, and prospects and people who are listening to this podcast might be able to fit their business in the M&A and IT services market. I'd love to hear kind of where you want to start, Mike.
Yeah, great. You know, what's hot and what's not, that's we get asked that a lot, actually. Every week we get asked by our clients and the market and the press and others about what's hot and what's not. Certainly, to jump right in on kind of what's hot, we're seeing certainly a major consolidation push within managed service providers going on right now. We think there's many reasons for that, some of which include sort of the age of the average ownership or leadership of managed service providers. Many folks are looking to either retire or slow down or begin to transition their business. Certainly, there's a lot of interest and a lot of money that's flowed into the private equity through private equity into MSPs looking to do roll-ups and consolidation, and that's certainly driving valuation. So if you're owning and running and managing an MSP, I'm sure you're getting lots of phone calls every week from people that want to have a discussion about acquiring your business. We'll stop there for a second and see if there's any observations, you know, Matt, you may have had or Ryan about that trend and sort of conversations that you're having with the market.
Yeah, you know, I think it's pretty natural. And, you know, the large majority of the, you know, managed service provider network has been very local. It's been smaller firms that are really good at serving their customers on a local basis. And so, you know, great business model. And, you know, let's remember, most managed service providers are primarily serving the, you know, small and medium business marketplace, right? Because once the end customer gets to a certain size, then they've got their own capabilities. They've got their own IT departments and the like. So it's really natural there that there's so many kind of smaller, locally based, you know, managed service providers, and they do a great job. And because they do a great job of keeping their customers and serving them well, they're super attractive.
Yeah, great. Well, I think, you know, as we look at also what's kind of hot in the market, you know, we see cloud everything, right? It's cloudy out there, boy. Woo. You know, call it app modernization, lift and shift, custom development of workloads in the cloud, custom development of software for workloads in the cloud. You name it, if it touches cloud, whether it be through one of the major vendor solutions with Microsoft or Amazon or Google, or it's parking workloads in those cloud infrastructures or even private cloud, you know, super hot right now. You know, companies are interested in rolling those businesses up and acquiring those businesses, and certainly super hot. I think also, cybersecurity is super hot right now. I mean, I think this week we had the ransomware attack on the refinery and the pipeline on the East Coast of the United States. And it again shined a bright light on, infrastructure vulnerabilities and other, hacks and attacks around and the need for comprehensive cybersecurity. Ryan, I don't know what you're seeing there, but certainly we're, collectively, I think we're seeing a tremendous amount of interest in cyber right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's two big factors here. One is there's just a big increased need for not only the solutions out there and a broadening solution set, but also the employees that are delivering those solutions. So we're seeing a skill shortage when it comes to actual cyber attacks and cyber warfare and everything that comes with the word cyber associated with it. And that includes sales and marketing people who are able to put together the right kind of materials to aid their products and offerings, all the way down to the implementation, configuration, and ongoing use of anything in the cyber world. The other the contributing portion to that is that it's a really diverse marketplace. So there's some very interesting research that breaks security not into just one category, which we may see it, but 54 different discrete categories ranging from vulnerability management to firewalls to the implementation or managed security services. So when you combine those forces in that shortage and the need, the security space has just become extremely hot to the point where, Mike, if you want to share anything about what you've seen on the valuation front, we're seeing figures that are absolutely incredible. For example, in the private equity world, you see an Arctic Wolf raise hundreds of millions of dollars. You've got NetSpy raising $95 million today. You've got other places where it's just a hot, hot market. How do buyers deal with those increased valuations and what should sellers do about that?
Yeah, I think it's a fascinating question, Ryan. I would tell you that, you have to be aware of what you're buying. Certainly there's a lot of what I'll call reseller type cyber oriented firms in the marketplace. Certainly they play a key role, but if they don't have a very meaningful and aggressive service transformation thesis, then the valuations for those businesses, are not in the stratosphere as they would be if they had that thesis. So certainly we've seen some interesting consolidation in the marketplace here, but the big interest, the key interest is in the services side of these businesses. Now, we certainly think there's merit in the reseller side of this business. It's very important for companies to be serviced by a great reseller that can understand and do procurement in a meaningful way, particularly for enterprises that are trying to deploy different cyber tools and trying to stay ahead of the bad guys. But it's also important that they can look to those vendors to leverage their, services infrastructure to help them. And we think the best companies, and frankly, in many ways, the best companies to buy today based on value are these companies that are in this, what we'll call services transformation, moving more from just a procurement model or a base procurement model to one where they do both things. We're seeing companies grow that side of their business that have been historically based or focused on procurement. And we're seeing, sort of companies that have been built from the ground up that focus on cyber who are, doing interesting things and certainly have lots of demand. So to your question, Ryan, about valuations, services play companies that we've seen of scale have gotten, valuations as high as 3x revenue. Those are for services only companies, ones that have material recurring revenue, ones that ultimately are growing quickly. And then sort of that goes all the way down to firms that are procurement only. And those guys will trade at, 5-6x EBITDA, and which is still a premium to what a typical reseller would get. So the middle ground is where I think it gets interesting, which is what is the services transformation journey for these companies? How far along are they? And, you know, if they have at least 10% of their revenue in services, then obviously valuations begin to go up. And, you know, your ability as an acquirer to help them sort of through that transformation thesis and still have access to those procurement customers, I think, is the sweet spot for valuation and for opportunity.
I think that's a great point, Mike. You know, the other thing, and kind of tying together the last two areas that you talked about, cloud and cybersecurity, you know, obviously it's all about digitization, right? And we are still, if you think about being in the digital world, we're so early. We're definitely in the first quarter of the football game and living in and being in and the digital world. Right. And the need for cybersecurity wasn't in place 20 years ago like it is today. And the need to drive your business to the cloud is still relatively early on. So there's still a tremendous amount of opportunity in these spaces to create value and to create differentiation. And so I think that's what leads many acquirers to be super interested in these organizations that have been innovative and demonstrated their ability to meet the customer's demands. And then to Ryan's point, because it is early, there's just, you know, it goes back to the old law of supply and demand, right? There's not enough supply in the marketplace to satisfy the needs for customers overall. And that's the case with the cloud as well. And, you know, in breaking down the cloud from the infrastructure providers that are helping with modernization of the entire environments to, the, you know, the application and digital service providers that are, you know, creating really innovative customer experiences, right? To those firms that are enabling the data to be used in a better way and to be managed in a better way. All of those things are hot because, you know, there's simply not enough innovative supply out there and the need is only continuing to grow. And so, you know, it's certainly not too late to be playing in those spaces.
Yeah, for sure. Go ahead, Ryan.
Yeah, well, I'm just kind of curious if you take that and you're someone's early in the life cycle and you're a developer of solutions and you've got something that is innovative. We're also at a time where M&A activity coming out of COVID has the opportunity to, what at least what we've seen in our own pipeline and seen in our own deal flow has greatly accelerated. How do you juxtapose a growing business and the opportunity for it to be something bigger with the opportunity to perhaps sell? Neither Mike or Matt, I'd love to get your opportunity. Is this something where it's truly a chance to join with someone else to become something that you couldn't be alone? Or is this a time where you entrench and perhaps try to ride a wave yourself?
Yeah, I know Mike has some thoughts on this, but let me jump in. I mean, I think that the opportunity, you know, things are moving fast, Ryan, right? And you either, you know, move at that speed or potentially get trampled, right? And sometimes, you know, moving at a faster speed means that you need to join up. You know, in my past life, we did a lot of partnering, right? Because we knew that we couldn't build all the capabilities that we needed to build. And so, you know, another way to think about that is by joining together through merger and acquisition with somebody who's, you know, got great capabilities. So for example, to your point, Mike, you know, a reseller who is down the path of that services transformation, you know, has a great opportunity to add on additional service capabilities or product capabilities through acquisition and vice versa, right? And so I think that it's a means to go faster and grab additional market share faster, which is going to be super important because, you know, if you're not doing that well, then somebody else is. Mike, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I think what's interesting about all of the concepts and the base, you know, base case, business case, if you will, for mergers and acquisitions, you really have to be able to architect, you know, in a combination. We use this term a lot, but it's just 1 + 1 = 3 or more, meaning in essence that you have to be able to go somewhere together that you can't go apart, or at least it's going to be much more difficult to go apart. I think if that exists and that either allows you to address a market in a new way or an expanded way, then there's great, great opportunity to come together and do, you know, have that be a big game changer. I think in many ways, if it's more of the same, which is kind of the easy button for acquisitions, you can think, well, you know, we're this size now, we want to put some capital to work, let's just, you know, get someone who's exactly like us, maybe in a new geography or has some customers. It's less meaningful, frankly. It's less impactful than if you do a deal that is truly allows the business to go a place together once you're combined that you couldn't go apart or couldn't go apart very easily. And so, you know, we certainly think that's something else to consider as you're looking at participating in an M&A deal. Other things that are hot, you know, certainly everyone loves recurring revenue right now. They think it's the greatest thing ever. Maybe this is a transition into what's not. I think a mistake in particular that private equity firms make when they look at recurring revenue is believing that that revenue is going to be there forever and ever, right? That it's a low risk of departure revenue because of the way it's contracted. That's not really the case. A lot of the recurring revenue models that have occurred have come in the infrastructure managed service space. And that's great, partially because, you know, these firms that subscribe or sign a managed services agreement need a certain level of support. And it's an easy way to deploy that and a very profitable way to deploy that. And we're certainly all about that. But at the same time, if a customer is unhappy, they can certainly cancel those contracts, regardless of how long they are. And if you're a client or if you're a managed service provider, as an example, where most of these types of agreements lie, unless you're in the business of suing your customer to enforce the contract, which we think is probably a bad idea. We think, you know, we've seen companies that have sued their customers on a regular basis, and it certainly creates a lot of ill will with the marketplace. Then the value of that recurring revenue contract per se shouldn't be overstated. And we think it's certainly a sticky contract relationship, and we encourage them. We encourage them for cloud providers and cybersecurity providers and really any IT services or consulting firm that can create more of a managed relationship, you know, app modernization and customization. Customized builds are also eligible to be kind of in this managed type arrangement. They're great, but don't overvalue them if you're a buyer thinking that they're the holy grail and non-cancelable, because that's just not the case. And, you know, Matt, I don't know, and Ryan, what your experience have been in looking at this in the context of valuation or even the flurry of activity by financial buyers right now. There certainly seems to be a lot of them that ask that as the first question as of a seller, what is their recurring revenue percentage? And we think that's probably not right.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that, Mike. Yeah, I had a great conversation, you know, and I'd counter to say that serving your customers better than your competition will always be one of the things that's most hot in the marketplace. Right? Being better and being more valuable. Now, and we talked about it before, sometimes being more valuable means that you need to add on to your capabilities. But in the context of just what you were saying, I was talking to, you know, one of our customers who's a smaller and local managed service provider who's picked up a lot of business from, firms that are in that consolidation place because those firms weren't serving their customers in the same way that this smaller local, managed service provider was. So for those PE firms or those larger consolidators to think that they can just grab hold of these recurring contracts, right, and ride them out, if you will, and not serve the customers as well, there's something amiss there. Because I haven't seen that successful track record of the service provider who's in the business of suing their customers, Mike. Ryan, what do you think?
Yeah, it's I agree with you. And what we've seen some mandates that are really almost obscene. For example, I'm not going to look at a company unless it has 90% recurring revenue. And that's not reoccurring or repeat revenue. Some companies are looking for 90%+ recurring revenue. And the reality of it is that businesses are going to have project work, and they're going to have time and materials, and they're going to have things that are not that are outside of the recurring bucket. And we can do another whole podcast on reoccurring versus recurring and where those revenue streams come from. But where we see things, a lot of firms get caught up in this bucket is that they want to show them, they want to push everything into a bucket. And if you look at an acquisition or a company just through the lens of that particular recurring lens, that myopic view, you can really lose sight of the gems that are out there that are providing good customer care and something above and beyond just something of an all-in contract. So, again, what's hot and not, I think, yeah, we love recurring revenue. We see multiples of valuations go up if it has recurring revenue. But don't lose your purpose or your soul just to get that recurring revenue up for a potential sale. There are other ways to make EBITDA multipliers outside of just recurring revenue.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's really interesting, and it's something that I think is easy to grab a handle on or to look as a qualifier if you're a financial buyer that may not have deep experience in the space. They're looking at a sort of a thesis that says, hey, if you have this and this and this, check the boxes, then it qualifies. But it's not that simple, right? There's got to be a quality of revenue and profit growth over a period of years, regardless of how it's contracted. Because that gets to Matt's point about, really taking care of the customer, having a, repeatable sales and marketing engine, being able to, meaningfully run the business profitably over the years. I think we're going to spin over to what's not. So as we're thinking about what's hot and what's not, certainly what's not is a bad introduction call. We see this happen over and over. We're being a little bit facetious. Maybe you want to listen to our bloopers podcast episode. We highlighted a few of those on that episode. But I tell you, if you're going to have a conversation with a buyer, and if you're a seller or vice versa, you're a buyer looking to acquire a company, bring your A game to that conversation. Really important to be able to present your, if you're a buyer, your thesis and your thoughts and what makes a good combination, and you're thinking about, managing that relationship moving forward once the transaction gets done. And likewise, if you're selling, your business, you need to have your selling shoes on, so to speak, and talk about why your business is special and how it's been built and ultimately what's in it for a potential buyer. How do you get to that 1+1=3 in order to really make it happen? And so things to keep in mind. Go ahead, Matt.
Jump in. It's funny that you say that about the bad introduction, and kind of what goes along with that is a buyer that thinks it's just about the money. And sure, the financial fit is obviously critical. Some people say, M&A begins and ends, with that valuation. And it's super important. right? But as we guide our customers, you know, cultural fit, strategic fit, and financial fit, they're all super important. And if you're a buyer that comes in and doesn't understand that, well, then you're not going to have a whole bunch of success. And, well, you're going to be pretty cold.
Yep, for sure. Other things that are kind of interesting on the what's not hot right now, I think reseller businesses are less hot. Certainly there's, you know, everyone's trying to race towards a services transformation, but, you know, there's folks that are doing a considerable amount of reseller business that are not really thinking about services transformation. We've seen some segments of this market see very low multiples, in some cases, no value. What I mean by that is they completely are discounted in a sort of multiple of EBITDA profit contribution sort of valuation exchange. And this is a pretty material change from where we've seen the market go over the last probably 3 years, where, you know, businesses with particularly those of scale that were resellers could get to very, you know, interesting and respectable multiples. And I want to say there's not, it's not that there's not buyers out there for those businesses. There are, but there's just not the flurry or the frothy market that we see for services businesses. And I don't know, Ryan, if you have any thoughts about that. I'll turn it over to you to kind of hear your observations on kind of reseller businesses and demand right now.
Absolutely. I think one of the things we're seeing is that resellers who are packaging up a solution from somewhere else and putting their own IP around it, they're looking for valuations that are perhaps higher than what the market actually gives. So the creator of that intellectual property doesn't necessarily pass on to the service provider for that same IP. So you may have some special ways of doing it, but it may not provide the value that you think it may when you look at ongoing value. So for example, the cybersecurity space, the person who's creating the software or the firewall or the hardware that goes with that may get a valuation compared to someone who's had a methodology for implementing it. Now, still important to have the process and the people and the technology to put your own branded wrapper on your intellectual property for implementation and customization and configuration. But it may not get you the multiples that you're expecting that if you're reselling someone's solution with a bit of your own wrapper.
Matt, what's your thoughts?
Well, I agree with that completely. But I think, you know, one thing kind of flipping back to the positive, Mike, in talking about what's hot is, well, revenue rocket's pretty hot, buddy. And we got a lot going on. So we've been on this call for a while, and I think we better get back to work here, Mike, and get into our customers' businesses and helping them grow and helping them grow through acquisition. What do you think?
Sounds like a plan, Matt. I appreciate it. You know, with that, I think we're going to tie a ribbon on it for this week, the third week of May in 2021. Tune in next week to hear what's going on in the world of growth strategy and M&A for IT services here at the Shoot the Moon podcast. With that, take care and have a great day.